Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Loose Ends, the weekly podcast where Dad and I just sort of shoot the shit to keep you company. How are you doing this week, Dad? You all right?
Paul, as per usual, I'm feeling very good. I feel positive. The weather here in Sydney is sensational. I'm sleeping well.
Good.
Christine and I started a new series last night. We watched 5 episodes back to back.
I have no idea what this is. I thought you were going to say Night Stalker, which was that new true crime series, which I'd like to talk to you about at some point.
We watched that. That is, I'd like to. I'm glad you mentioned it. Mm. Can we commend that to all our listeners all over the world?
I was going to say that it feels like it's two shows in one. One of them is an extremely good true crime detective story about a really interesting rookie detective. And then there's the other part, which I feel is a filmmaker wanting to make a narrative film and doing these really aggressively overwrought David Fincher style, reenactments. They'll enter a house and there'll be super slow-mo of a hammer falling and a moth struggling in a pool as some sort of metaphor. So I feel if you can strip away all the kind of stylistic BS, you've got yourself a really compelling 4-part true crime series. But forgive me, Dad, what's the series that you've started binging?
It's called Cloud Nine.
Have you
heard of it?
No, so what's it on?
Sort of like filmed in the equivalent of a big like Kmart, sort of Target type store, and it's just about the staff, but it's a comedy.
You sure it's called Cloud Nine?
I think it's called Cloud Nine.
I think it's called Superstore.
Oh, okay.
Hang on, I think I saw this on Netflix. Superstore. I think it runs for 5 seasons. Superstore TV series. Yeah. So
I don't know where I got Cloud Nine from.
No, it's a sitcom on Netflix. It looks like their latest season has them wearing masks, which is great. I don't recognize any of the cast, which doesn't mean anything, really.
Look, it's just so delightful and quirky, and I have never watched 5 episodes of anything in one evening.
I'm so chuffed that you found yourself a comedy, comedy.
Well, Christine and I seriously needed to pull back from crime because we watch Dexter.
Yeah.
We watch Sherlock. We watch a lot of true crime.
You mean Elementary, right?
Yeah, Elementary. Yeah. We watch a lot of Nordic noir. Mm-hmm. We watched the one about the lady who was murdered and dismembered in the submarine. True story.
What?
Yeah, in Denmark. You don't know that story?
Hang on, is this a true crime?
Yeah, true crime. Oh, what? God, it's...
In a fucking submarine?
Yeah. But the good thing about the Danish portrayal, we watched that over 2 nights. It's gripping. May I also commend that to everybody that has access. It's the true story of a journalist it's a staggering, unbelievable story about it. Christine and I actually discussed at length this particular Danish it's a documentary kind of drama, sort of adaptation on a true story. It's a horrendous story. And what it shows you, it's one of the best examples of what it is actually like to be a detective. It's no frills. It's one of the great things about the series, it's a short series, is that they don't ever show the offender. And I think that's really good.
What do you think about... one of the things that rears its head in Night Stalker, and that really troubled me. And it was something I was kind of tangentially aware of, and that was, do you think that when you broadcast the, for lack of a better term, accomplishments of a, let's say, a serial killer or, you know, a criminal who is trying to make kind of themselves, you know, trying to get themselves out there publicly, do you think you are giving them what they want? You are giving them attention. And do you think there is merit to not necessarily giving them the airtime and giving them a cool name and sort of covering them? Because in Night Stalker, the killer actually had groupies.
He did. He married one.
Wait, Night Stalker?
Yep.
Did he?
Well, I've done some behind-the-scenes research, Paul, as I tend to do.
Yeah, but do you think that would have happened if the press hadn't have crafted a character almost based on him and then pushed that as a story?
No, because he was a very, apart from when he opened his mouth, I don't want to give too much away, but if he kept his mouth closed, he was, and you can't deny...
Unique looking. He was.
Well, I think he could have... In fact, I said to Christine, if he had gone on the straight and narrow, he could easily have been a male model. What do you think about that?
He does have amazing cheek.
Incredible. Chiseled. I mean, really, he's, you know, in, and there were women in the court that were, well, sitting in the stalls.
Salivating. It was crazy.
Yeah, I'd go so far as to use other metaphors.
Percolating in the nether regions. I think one of my problems was that there was a real sense that some people, I think, were into him because he was famous, right? I think there was a certain degree of, holy shit, the most famous person in the world right now is famous for hurting people, but there's a kind of allure to that. And I think, I mean, it's different now, given that social media lets people be kind of momentarily famous much easier. You have more likelihood of getting known in some sort of meme or whatever, you know, or some news grab than you ever did. And maybe that's sort of dissipated this weird, just this fervor for anyone who has been on television, anyone who is vaguely famous. I'm wondering
Paul,
how...
Yeah. Well, look, the most troubling aspect of this particular guy, in my opinion, and what made it so difficult to track him down, was the fact that there was no pattern in his victim choosing. Now, I'm not going to talk about, I'm not going to go into it at this stage. I'd love to. I'd love to do a whole, mate, you and I could talk about this series, but this has sort of come out of the blue a little bit. But maybe if we can get enough traction and enough people to watch it, then perhaps you and I could really get into it. But we don't want to do, we want people to watch it first. We don't want to sort of spoil things.
One caveat I will give, Dad, is that I think it's probably more graphic than most.
Definitely.
You know, I mean, they do this really, they do something which I don't love. And this, I'm looking forward to seeing what you think about this. And the filmmaker has made this choice to show extremely violent crime scene photographs with the eyes blacked out, which is, you know, that's fine.
That's standard,
That's how you choose to do it.
Yeah, yep.
And then some cool camera cuts and then really upbeat synthy 80s music to make it feel like a genre piece. And it feels a little exploitative and it feels like it cheapens some of the violence to me because, yes, it's objectively cool. The cinematography, the editing, the music, it's all very cool. But you've just cut away from a photo of someone's actual dead grandmother and 6 minutes of their relatives grieving with no music. And I feel I just feel like...
That's interesting, Paul.
Yeah, I think stylistically it's a bit of a mess. But
okay.
Hidden in there is genuinely... I mean, I was watching this with Tegan and she turned to me and said, that's Dad, that's John. Because the lead detective is this rookie cop who becomes a detective and gets paired up with far more senior people. And and there were just a lot of parallels there.
That's very sweet of you and Tegan to say.
Yeah.
That. One of the things I found striking in this series is that they had, and I think it was, I don't know whether I've ever, in fact, I've never seen what I'm about to describe ever portrayed in a documentary. And that is that they showed the actual crime scene photographs. They then did a mock-up of the same crime, body in situ, but an actor, of course, or two bodies.
Yeah.
The detail was a carbon copy.
It was
of the actual crime scene.
Yeah.
I think that is fascinating. a hell of a lot of extra work to go to, and I don't know whether everyone would really appreciate it. And I think it's so fascinating, you have to ask yourself, why would you do that? I mean, they can make it, obviously, what it, I guess, does is it shows a photograph of a crime scene which is one-dimensional, and then he creates, he or she, with a massive team, no doubt, they create a three-dimensional walkthrough of the room. Have you ever seen that done before?
No. The most notable one was with the first victim, who I believe was an Asian-American who was attacked. She was, I think, quite young, actually, and she was on the floor of her apartment. Oh, that's right. She'd answered the door because he came to actually... Yeah, she answered the door. Her roommate was out of the apartment at that point. The roommate, by the way... Dad, have we just accidentally pivoted into making this an episode about Night Stalker? I'm fine if we have. Like, I have no problem doing that. But yeah, so they basically got what looked like an actor and used some kind of 3D graphics to have the camera effectively zoom through a 3D rendered version of the crime scene photograph, because then you see the photo and it's exactly the same.
Exactly. It was, in fact, some of the walkthrough footage of like a body on a bed, and the blood was just, it was everywhere. But I was thinking, at first, it was so well done that I was actually considering that these could be actual movie footage from the actual day of the murder.
Oh, really?
But then I began to realize that it was a mock-up. But I mentioned a particular crime within this series to a friend, and because of what I mentioned... That friend of mine and the wife, on the spot, quite adamantly declared that under no circumstances they were going to watch that series because of the particular crime and the age of the victim that I mentioned.
Yeah.
So
I think I know the crime you're talking about.
Yeah, but the thing is, how weird is it, Paul, that you and I are talking about it, and basically if you and I were doing a film review... We'd have people just running at their TV sets wanting to sit down and watch it because we're creating a sort of a sense of, God, what anticipation.
Yeah, I think so. But what's interesting, Dad, is I've had friends of mine, you know, struggle reading Electric Blue and basically say, well, I tried to read it, but it was just too violent for my tastes, and I don't think I can read it based on the crimes. And I want to kind of tell them, look, it's really not about the gore. I mean, there is some gore in Electric Blue, but it's not. I don't think it's excessive. But then I need to remember that the tolerance that you and I have, and especially our listeners and the readers of the books, true crime fans have a really high tolerance for this stuff.
They do.
You can't just take a non-true crime person and show them crime scene photographs and expect them to be okay, because I don't think you're meant to be okay. I think it's meant to affect you on some level. You told me and the listeners, I think several times, that the moment this stuff stops affecting you, you probably should quit the job because you don't. It's a good thing to connect emotionally on some level because it's evidence of your humanity. But I mean, watching Night Stalker, was it weird for you watching crimes that were happening while you were on the force?
Oh, that's so fascinating, Paul. I was a young police officer during this. And it's one of the most horrendous stories that I've ever heard. And I'm surprised that I didn't know much about it.
Nor did I.
It was interesting. The tabloids of the day were coming up with all these different terms as to how to describe him. Because editors love to come up with a title. And the term Night Stalker was probably the fourth sort of descriptive term that was actually, that gained traction.
Yeah.
A couple of the others weren't, dare I say it, crash hot. And then, I mean, the thing that made this, and this guy traveled as well, but one of the terrible aspects of this documentary, and this is not a spoiler alert, was it revealed high-level police incompetence. And I found that really upsetting.
Who do you think were the incompetent cops?
Well, it was process. It was a lot of the problems in America is that the agencies, of which there are numerous, reluctantly share information. They would prefer not to because they're into the kudos.
It's about getting credit for the thing.
Getting credit.
And at one point, there was a one point where basically, I mean, we keep seeing this in these fucking Netflix true crime documentaries. There's basically two recurring narratives. One is different police forces not cooperating. We saw this in the case of, who was it? Bundy. Mm. With Ted Bundy, where he basically would cross state lines and different police departments had different systems and also didn't want to communicate. So you could basically just get a bit of a reset in terms of the pursuit. And the other narrative we see is, I would say, middle-aged male cops with Sherlock Holmes complexes who think they're king shit, basically picking a direction for the case and then because of pride or whatever, refusing to budge when the evidence is screaming at them. We saw it with the Amanda Knox case.
The Yorkshire Ripper.
Yep, with the Yorkshire Ripper. It's exactly the same thing. Now, in this case, I don't think we saw that. In this case, I think we saw people actually doing honest-to-God work and kind of stymied.
Mm. But what about that police? What about the car?
Oh, the fucking car where they had the... Yeah, so...
And they impounded... This, well, there's a car involved and someone got a partial registration and they identified this car and they impounded it. And the... two homicide detectives that are basically running the show, they wanted the car to be fingerprinted. It stayed in this yard outdoors for at least weeks, possibly months.
In the sun.
In the sun and all the terrible weather, and nothing happened to it. They go back to the car, they locate it, and they did a forensic search, which actually was not all that forensic. It was just open up the car and have a look around, and they find something, don't they, Paul? What remember they that card again? They find?
Oh, shit. So, listeners, if you are sitting here thinking, God, I would love to watch this show, pause this episode, go and watch it. It's four episodes. You'll burn through it like in a night, and then just check back in with this episode, I reckon, at some point during this week. But consider this, this episode is, by this point, Dad, they will have seen the Night Stalker in their feed, so that's what this episode's going to be called, all right? This is now a Night Stalker recap episode, okay?
Love it.
Okay. So, they find the card belonging to...
to the, dentist. At this stage, a suspect, but it's a dental card with a time and date, an appointment. And they know this guy... has got, I'm just trying to remember how they know. Or maybe they don't know he's got really bad teeth, but that's one of the features.
It was in the description. Yeah, there were several descriptions teeth.
Yep. You're right. People had described. And they said he had a terrible, terrible smell emanating from his body. He was very tall. But Paul, they find this card. It was a breakthrough.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So they organize or try to organize a stakeout.
At the dentist's office, because they figure he's... Well, they go there first, chat with the dentist, and the dentist says, look, he's going to have to come back because...
He had an abscess.
And an abscess is going to... He's going to need to come back and get that treated within the next few days.
Mm. And then the two homicide detectives have to get an undercover squad to work.
Yeah.
However, the B word, budget, senior police said... We're not going to authorize payment for the overtime.
Mm-hmm.
And they pulled all the three undercover staff that were sitting in the surgery waiting for this guy to return. And then the poor detectives, in desperation, set up this really dodgy, shitty, probably... What's a shitty electronic store? That one that used to be all over, but still all over America, Radio Shack.
Like Radio Shack.
But with respect, I mean, I'm not saying it's a shitty store, but they set up this kind of weird alarm.
My understanding was jurisdiction was a problem. So the cops whose jurisdiction the dentist office fell into basically said, look, technically, this is our area, so we're going to take your guys out of there, and we're just going to whack in an alarm system which will go off. The dentist can press it when he's there.
Yep. So the dentist calls the police and says, "What happened? Where were you? I had the guy in my seat.
Yep.
I was pushing this bloody button, and it malfunctioned. And by the time the police get there." The guy's long gone. I mean, that's just... It's a series of events over a period of time. And the big thing when you're investigating a crime like that where it's a serial killer is that you are very, very much aware of the fact that your stuff-ups, your inaction is contributing to the death and abduction and sexual assault of more people.
Because it continues. I mean...
Continues. And that's what... It was so traumatic on the police officers' private lives.
Yeah.
Did
you ever have cases like that that kind of impacted you outside of work?
Yes, Paul. I was sitting in the car in my ute this morning... listening to the ABC. It was between 9 and 10 a.m. this morning on Radio National. And they were interviewing an ex-Victorian police officer who worked in the air wing. And he's written a book. And I was listening to him talk and, you know, he suffered a few sort of fairly traumatic events. Certainly no more traumatic than some of the stuff I've seen. And I don't think he went or got involved in forensics. So I've really been to the dark side. I was sitting there and I felt relaxed and I'm listening to him talk. And he is, this particular guy, I'd love to meet him. He's so traumatized by the events of his time in the Victorian police force. He is so traumatized that he cannot watch TV. He watches no news. He doesn't read newspapers. He said he may appear... And friends often say that he's sort of just completely tuned out, but he's so affected by his time in the Victorian police force that he cannot listen to any news because things trigger, all these things. But, you know, there were quite a few events in my career, Paul. There was the incredible story of the North Shore rapist who'd committed multiple rapes on the northern beaches, and he one night tried to break into our flat when your mother was at home, and she's by herself, and the North Shore rapist tried to get in through the bathroom. You know the story, don't you?
It's in Electric Blue, yeah.
Yeah, and he was spotted, and there was a whole sort of eventful evening, but he's Eight of his fingerprints were found on the ledge going into our apartment. So that's fairly close, I think you'll agree. And then there's the case of the guy, and I don't want to do a spoiler because I'm not sure whether it's in this book or the next book, but remember the guy that rammed the police car? He was on LSD? And we put him into the cells at North Sydney. Remember what he did? We're going to talk about that in the future.
And
then he went up to the hospital, and and my point being that I went home after my shift, and I flicked on the news, and they had this interrupted the show for this live Eye News on Channel 10.
Yeah,
and there he was.
Yeah, that's in Loose Units. That's in the first book, I believe.
And we'll be talking about that. But that's the thing about, you know, when you clock off, you know, it's still happening in your mind. And then, of course, being in the police force, if you witness an event that, you know, requires sort of intervention, and you're on holidays, case in point, that time when Christine was pregnant, and she was kicked by the SKP. You remember that one?
Yes.
So that's, and I've been on holidays for 4 weeks.
Yeah.
So you kind of, you know, once you get into that sort of, that frame of mind, I think it'd be derogation of duty.
Dereliction.
On many, many levels. What?
Dereliction of duty.
Sorry, shit. Where did I get derivation? Yeah, dereliction of duty. It'd be like being on a plane, I suppose, and if you knew how to do CPR and you just sat there and just didn't get involved and the person died, I guess you'd have to live with that. So, yeah, it can be. But that show, Paul, that we're talking about is it's incredible.
Let's look at the scale of what this person did. So, and if you've seen the show, if you haven't seen the show, this is obviously a spoiler. I mean, it's no spoiler to know that the killer was caught, which is good. But he was convicted of 13 counts of murder, 5 attempted murders, 11 sexual assaults, 14 burglaries. Having said that, they decided not to charge him with the child rape because they didn't want to drag children into a courtroom with this guy because they thought he's going to get life and the death penalty, or the death penalty anyway. So why subject children to that trauma? Which I think is a really interesting call.
Very fascinating, Paul. I totally understand their logic, but I also, you know, they would have had to have consulted with the families of the victims, of the children, and said, look, we can guarantee that this is what is going to happen to him. Basically, do you give us permission to not, you know, charge him with these heinous offences?
With the Ripper, with the Yorkshire Ripper, I remember one of the major fuck-ups was the big police upstairs basically said at some point, yeah, no more victims. Like, stop adding victims to this list. And I remember at one point they had to actually tell this I believe the relative of one of the victims, that they couldn't actually charge. Am I remembering this correctly? Am I misremembering this? That they couldn't add this person and have them on the record.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, it's quite incredible. I do understand, without giving it too much away, but...
Wait, no, I'm remembering Dez. I'm remembering the drama, the miniseries Dez that they did, and where basically they were trying to tabulate all the people he'd killed. I know it's based on true events, and this actually happened, but they were trying to figure out who he'd killed. And... yeah, at some point it's like there was a cutoff for being able to actually attribute him, but that gives closure. And what this person wanted was they wanted in court to have some justice doled out. So I think as far as if you were a parent, I'd like to think that your desire to make sure your child didn't have to live through any more trauma would supersede your need for punitive justice.
I mean, God, that was heavy.
Did you ever encounter any? I assume we would have heard about this, but did you ever encounter any serial killers, or were there any kind of operating in and around your beat at any point?
Oh, God, yeah. Serial killers, mate. Serial rapists.
No, mate. Killers. Not serial killers.
Well, there was the granny killer. You know, he killed, I'm not sure how many grannies he killed. Could be, I'm not quite sure. Could have been 6 in Mossman area.
Okay, right. And when was
this? So that was... Well, that's back in the 80s. I'd need to do a little bit of research on that.
Yeah,
for another time. But he was a serial killer.
We've got serial killers in Australia, like Ivan Milat over in, was that Belangolo?
But Paul, have a look how many missing people there are every year in Australia. Don't forget that as we all sit and talk and listen in the in our community of our podcasting community, as we all are alive and conscious at this point in time, there are vile things happening as we speak. There have to be. There are people around the world that are in dungeons, locked away. There are serial killers. They just haven't been caught. And Paul, also, you must remember that in this story, the Night Stalker, wasn't it unbelievable that this junior homicide detective, and he went out on a limb and he was pilloried and he was mocked by all the other police because he believed that there was a connection. And they just said, "You're dreaming," because there were some fascinating things. But imagine how many crimes there are that are actually connected but are never ever found to be connected.
Yeah.
That is so fascinating. And the thing about this particular guy, don't forget, he would go on a rampage at nighttime. He'd kill two people, rape one of the kids. Then he would leave that house and go to another house that night and murder a few more people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what on earth was driving this guy? However, it needs to be said to the listeners that when this kid was a young boy, do you recall what his father used to do to him when he was naughty?
Yes.
He took him to a cemetery, tied him to a cross, and left him there all night.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not making excuses, but that's pretty fucked up on many levels. So, yeah, creepy.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned the granny killer, so I'm just going to read this quick bio because I didn't actually know about this. Over 13 months, beginning in March 1989, 4-and-20 pie salesman John Wayne Glover killed six elderly women in Sydney's affluent harbourside suburb of Mossman, as you said, earning him the moniker the Granny Killer. His first victim was Gwendolyn Mitchell-Hill, who he sneaked up behind as she went to enter a pump building. He hit her in the back of the head with a hammer. And stole money from her purse. In the subsequent murders, Glover usually attacked his victims with a hammer before removing their pantyhose and strangling them with the garment. He came to the attention of the police over a string of nursing home assaults that he also committed. When he was asked to attend a police interview, he attempted suicide and wrote a suicide note. The fucking coward. In the note, he had written "no more grannies," leading to his arrest over the murders. But before his arrest, he would kill one more woman. He was sentenced to multiple life prison terms and hanged himself in jail in 2005. I'm looking at this photo of him. He looks sort of middle-aged, a bit soft, a bit doughy, kind of harmless. I mean,
you said doughy, Paul. That goes well with the pie salesman thing, doesn't it?
That's very bad press for 4-and-20.
Thank you.
Also, what's a pie salesman?
A salesman that sells pies.
Okay. one of my problems with the cool name, like Granny Killer, Night Stalker, you know, the Boston Strangler, whatever you want to call these people, once they've got that name, I feel like if I was a serial killer and I was trying to get people's attention, the moment when that name stuck in the press would be, if anything, impetus for me to continue, because I would feel like I'd been given my bat suit, like I've been given my, you know, I feel like it empowers the killer. And what I was asking at the start of the episode, Dad, do you think there is some merit to just not giving them what they want? And to that end, should the press even be reporting on this stuff until it's resolved?
Paul, mate, I hear where you're coming from, but the press have a civil duty. If we're talking a serial killer, we, the public, have a right to be able to protect ourselves, perhaps more. Now, if he has a certain MO, with the North Shore rapist, for example, his general MO was to scale, like a cat burglar, high-rise apartments on the beaches because women generally felt safe being up high and didn't need to lock their sliding glass door going out onto their balcony.
Yeah.
Now, if we find out that a rapist or a murderer is scaling buildings, So tall buildings.
You can take measures to stop.
You can
stop
take
that.
Measures.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm living in that situation and I know there's a serial killer getting around, I am going to lock my door.
Yeah.
Lock all the doors. And I'll be just that little bit more vigilant. And when I come into the entrance to the building, if I think there's, or even if I'm not aware that there's some major thing happening, I'm always really safe and conscious.
Yeah.
Of just basic rules, basic common sense. And because you've got to kind of, you don't want to be paranoid, but if there is a dead set, imagine the suburb that you and Tegan live in, or where I live, or where all our listeners are. Imagine if or it's a country town. Imagine if it's a country town in Australia or overseas, and then all of a sudden someone goes missing, body found, week later another body, then another body, and you think, hang on a sec, got a bit of a problem. If they're all, say, teenage girls, and that's the serial killer's MO,
yeah,
and he targets young girls, then, okay, all young girls probably should be a little bit more sort of on guard, and probably the only way they're going to find out about this is through the news agencies. And I think that's a very good service that news platforms can provide people.
Ideally, yeah.
The problem with the Night Stalker poll, there was no pattern to his victims,
yeah,
at all, which is so, I found that, staggering.
Yeah.
You recall one of the things that linked all the crimes?
The shoes.
Correct.
That was my concern. The press basically wanted
to report.
They
fucked up.
Yep.
Badly. Yep. Do you know that that was the only pair of shoes sold in that city? There was one pair sold.
Oh, you mean of that kind? Not
of
the
that
only
kind.
Pair of shoes sold in Los Angeles?
No, yeah. Well, that'd be a bit sad because there'd be a lot of barefooted people.
But basically their problem was, look, if he finds out that we know these are the ways we're identifying his crimes, he's going to change shoes. I don't know if that's true, because I think he was taking pride. I mean, the thing is, did he want to be caught? He kept leaving signs.
No, I don't think so, Paul.
Okay. In which case, the press coming and basically going, look, we want to report on the shoes, and then effectively blackmailing them into an interview. Now, yes, that is the squeaky wheel gets the grease. My question is, if they had actually reported that, and then he'd change shoes and more people had died as a result, that seems like pretty fucking live ammunition to be playing with when there's lives at stake.
I agree with you. Paul, that's...
You know, being in the press is about... I mean, being an actual journalist is about calling truth to power, right? And telling the truth. But also going, look, does this help people? Because if you just get a scoop and you sell lots of papers, but getting that scoop ruins the case for the police and keeps this guy out there killing people for an extra year, then your scoop isn't worth
it. Agree. Paul, I think it's all also very important to remember that is the symbol that he left at some of the crimes.
Oh, yeah, the
demonic symbol.
Kind of stuff. Yeah.
And that had strong, visceral memories of Charles Manson.
Yes.
Who was the devil's child. But people are drawn to these people.
Yeah.
Many, many, many women. Many have married and become involved with people that have committed atrocious crimes.
It's bizarre.
And people in jails, staff, and lawyers, solicitors, they get involved. You know, because if you're a murderer or a rapist or a pedophile or whatever your proclivity is to crime, it doesn't mean that A, you're not really smart, B, you could be very good looking, male or female, you could be very attractive, handsome, C, you could have great charisma, you could be beguiling.
Yeah.
I mean, how do a lot of these murders, and particularly people that gain your trust? I mean, look at Ted Bundy. All his victims were girls in their late teens, early 20s. A lot of them were at university. But he used to, remember that terrible case? Because he got around in that Volkswagen. And remember how he had that fake plaster cast on his arm? And he went to that crowded swimming spot, a beach or a big lake or something, and there were thousands of people there.
That's so right, yeah.
It was a weekend holiday. Yep. And he just approached this girl because he was a good style of a bloke, apart from being a mass murderer.
Aesthetically, you mean?
To look at, he was... Yeah. He'd studied law. He was a smart guy, very high IQ. Mm. And he would just... Look, That is different in that he was... His crimes were incredibly premeditated.
Yeah.
You know, it's mate,
it's a good show. It's like I said, I think stylistically it makes some real missteps, but I think the actual crime is fascinating. If you haven't already seen it, head across to Netflix. Otherwise, feel free to hop across to our Facebook page and let us know what you thought of the show, or if you have any other true crime series that are airing right now that you would like Dad and I to sink our teeth into. We still haven't done a dedicated episode on The Staircase, which I think is a crime.
Mm. It is a crime, Paul. Good call. Yeah,
well, it is.
I like it.
Several. But look, I think that's all the time we have for this week's episode of Loose Units, Loose Ends. We are going to be back first thing next week with a brand new episode of the show. We miss you all terribly. Dad and I are already very, very keen to do a live show the second we can. We hope you're all well, and we will see you next week for more Loose Units. Bye.
Cheerio.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.